This is the Helping Up Podcast. I'm Vic King, chaplain at Helping Up Mission in Baltimore, Maryland. And it's been a minute, almost 6 months since our last episode. For the past few months, we have continued recording stories of addiction and recovery and grace, but we haven't had time to produce those into podcasts. And so we've got a backlog that we're going to be working through and releasing ahead of our usual once a month schedule over the next few months. Excited about that. Excited to bring some of these stories to you. Eric graduated from our spiritual recovery program a few months ago now and has been doing great work as a peer recovery support specialist. I'm also excited for you to hear a new podcast. It's called Drug Stories. It's produced by Miriam Zimmerman and a few other talented journalists in the DC area. It's a short form podcast. Each episode is maybe 6 or 8 minutes. They're sharing first person stories of people affected by the opioid epidemic in all kinds of different ways. Not just folks who are in recovery, but folks who are in active addiction, first responders like paramedics, loved ones of folks who have died. It's a bracing and beautiful body of work. Again, the podcast is called Drug Stories, and they actually interviewed Eric as well. So with their permission, of course, I'm excited to share their take, their angle on Eric's story. So without further ado, let's dive in. This is from the Drug Stories podcast.
When I was around 3 or 4 years old, my parents decided to move us from West Baltimore out to Carroll County, a very small town in Carroll County. It was a shock, but it was a welcome shock. Now, school begins, and the first thing I notice is I don't look like these people. I don't sound like these people, and I felt different. You know, I am a black man. And 2% of the population in that county to this day is minority. At first, I tried to work through it. However, kids are cruel. For one, I had a stuttering problem. It was fueled by anxiety and everything else. So I was made fun of and I was picked on. But it was stressed in my household to read, to learn, and no one will ever be able to deny you. And as soon as my grades were great, I mean, I was a great student. I was always at the top. I won spelling bees and everything. I felt like I was part of something that I belonged to. So one could say that, like, at an early age, I was also searching for approval of others. What kid doesn't? However, throughout middle school and high school, that same need for approval had me doing things that I really didn't even care for. I went places with people that I didn't like or even want to be with. It was a constant need for approval. Peer pressure. The time I turned 15, I decided to start using drugs. I started to do heroin before I did anything else. I thought that a cool guy my age did drugs and drank. And this was 1995 when I graduated. There were 4 black people in my class. Counting myself, what was happening was I was not black enough to be around them, but I was not white enough to be around the others. That's when I debuted selling the drugs, because at this point, my heroin habit had gotten insane. I had gone from 30, 40 bucks a week to now I'm close to $100 a day. No one knows what it's like to need to put 50 bucks in your body before you can brush your teeth. No one knows what that's like unless you've been through this. It's like waking up with the flu times 1,000. Every night, I'm not going to sleep. I'm laying down and resting my eyes for 3 hours. After homework, sports, social time, girlfriend, family time, getting right back up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm being picked up from a small town in Carroll County, Maryland, by older white men that would otherwise not talk to me at all, so we can go down and I can get them their fix, their money can get me mine, and I can be dropped back off to get on a school bus and go to school and perform, pass tests, give speeches, and act like nothing was wrong. One teacher my senior year spoke to me. She said, you know, Eric, I know you've had some problems, and if there's something I could do to stop you, I would. Only you have the answer. Please let me know what I can do to help. And I looked her dead in her face and I said, there is nothing wrong with me. What can you tell a teenager, especially a teenager that feels like he or she is in charge? When you're not done, you're not done. And I was out to do harm to myself. I couldn't do enough drugs. I couldn't do enough drinking. Everything I did was just so far off the meter. It's not about the drug pulling you. It's about feeling that you have nothing to live for. You have no hope. So I began to seek the solution. I chose this self-help group. I could show up the way that I was. I could be who I was. And within reason, me keeping my story as my story, someone was going to relate and get something from me even on my worst day. It was about learning how to live again. All I knew was drugs, and that's not living. So in 08 or 09, I checked into a sober house situation. I put together 2 years clean. My first time getting clean, I put together 2 years clean. But I fell again and used. And in 2010, I overdosed for the first time. It was a combination of prescription meds that I was prescribed for anxiety, pain meds that I was prescribed for a broken collarbone, and a couple of beers. So that began my overdose history. Once you overdose once, you're pretty much in line to continue that path until you die. Then that's just what I know based on experience. Overdose again, two more times that year. At this point, we know how it goes. I do well, and then I do not. I continue the same behaviors, and I get the same results. I didn't have enough to live for to worry about dying. It was as if I always needed someone's approval to validate me wanting and needing to live. I was never good enough for me. And I believe that's what's different about this time around. And I'm never going to say, I got this, I'm okay, but I'm definitely all right. This time, I checked into a facility that was in April of 2017. I now work for a very prominent local hospital. My job is I link people with the help and the hope that they need to possibly seek treatment. Because I practice the principles, tolerance, patience, faith, perseverance, I managed to make a career out of my story, my life, and my experience. So this has taught me to look at myself and learn myself. And when someone's speaking, truly listen to learn. Because I don't always have an answer, but I do have an ear to listen. I'm Eric Whitaker, and this is my story.
So that's the first part of Eric Whitaker's story. That was from the Drug Stories podcast. You can find them wherever you're listening to this. If you're listening to it in a web browser, you can head on over to drugstories.org. Or if you're listening through your podcast app, whatever that is, you can just search in the directory for Drug Stories Project. Now we're going to jump over into my conversation with Eric and hear some more of his story. Hope you enjoy it.
My name is Eric. I am 40 years old. I don't have parents. Parents died when I was 19 and 20. My first two kids were taken from me because I was dealing dope and working, trying to live double lives. And I dragged them everywhere I went because they were boys. So I lost them. They took them from us. And I just had a newborn.
You want to give us just a quick kind of rundown of your childhood years? Because then you started in West Baltimore. You ended up in Carroll County.
My dad ran everything. My mom was the good girl, the school girl. My dad was the good guy, the mechanic, Mr. Do Everything. And I wanted to be just like him. So I did everything that he did. It was more or less like my dad trained me and my mom raised me. But they were both there. But it was like depending on which one of my dad's personalities came home that day. determine how the next 24 hours went. So I spent most of my life trying to be like him, but couldn't stand him. And this is even after he died. He died when I was locked up in upstate New York, Attica. I feel as if he prepared me and life prepared me. Because some of the things that they instilled in me early cannot be taken away from me no matter what happens or who dies. Certain things that I'm going to have forever. And I really appreciate that. I first used because I saw the quote unquote cool guys that my parents told me to stay away from in the city. I saw them sniffing, buying everybody ice cream, the new shoes, saying the cool stuff. They had the girls. One day I just wanted to be like them, but my parents had already moved me out to the county. I started working in a restaurant, started out washing dishes, and I would clean the kitchen after the cool guys there left. And that's when my use got really bad, once those guys found out that I was a young guy and I was trying to be like them and I was connected. I was still 50% in the city. So I was getting the party goods and I got along with everybody and it just made my issue so much worse, so much faster. But I was an A student, so I wasn't endangering anything. Yeah, very good student. It was pretty much instilled in me. Education is one of those things that you can put me in the bottom of the ocean and I'm still going to have it. I thought I was going to be a police officer. I wanted to be a detective. And I always found things and I always went exploring. And I'd always sit and watch everything. And I just felt like I had the best chance at it. Because I wasn't afraid of things. I always wanted to protect everything around me. And police did that back in the day.
So after high school, what happened?
Well, after high school, can't be a police officer when your first charge as an adult is robbery and assault. I was charged with a robbery for robbing a homeless guy for $4. And the boss from my same job, he came out and bailed me out and he told them there's no way this guy did this. You know, this guy was over here eating a cheesesteak. The money that he had in his pocket is the money he had from his change. Why would he do this and that and this? Come to find out, someone coerced this gentleman into saying that because I was selling drugs and they couldn't catch me. So that prevented me from getting into Towson State immediately after graduation. And that 1 year turned into 2 years. And then I went to upstate New York, enrolled in school. And a week before school started, I got booked for robbery again. It was a street fight gone wrong. This time it was not looking good. So that began my little jail stint, my little history with jail. I was up there about 4 years, something like that. Came back to Baltimore from there. And then, well, my mom died when I came back down here. And I kind of spaced out for about 6, 7, 8 months. I walked out of her funeral and didn't go home for like 6 months. I went on a hellacious drug run. Like I was running. I was doing all types of things. I was trying to die. I was stealing dope from dope boys, waiting for them to come kill me. And little did I know, the family I had then was keeping them from killing me because they were in the same business and they pretty much told him, just let him go. We'll cover whatever he's doing. And I didn't know that at the time, but that's what was happening. And then I went to Philadelphia, Scranton area to get cleaned up a little bit. Went up there to try to just do it. And it lasted for a second. And then that's when she started doing the heroin. And that in conjunction with a lawsuit we had against the police department, the pressure just broke all sorts of pipes. And then when we settled on the lawsuit, she was making 14 an hour. I'm making 12. I'm selling dope. And then we get 80 grand. It was just a perfect storm. Too much money, too young, too much. Lost the kids a year later. And I got booked for selling dope again. And then Well, I got clean for 2 years in 08. Honestly, I finally got into a rehab. I didn't know it was so easy. I just had to press a little bit, and I got into a rehab, and I went to one out in Pennsylvania, and went there and put together like 2.5 years clean. Ended up dating drug counselors and stuff like that. It was weird. And then I had some drinks with the drug counselor, and within a month I was driving down here every weekend, doping again. So we split and everything else. But yeah, so I was just in and out, you know, clean and I'm not. I'm going to say about 3 or 4 times. Went to Kentucky, got cleaned up down there, did well, did not. And then I came back out here about 2015 or 16, I think it was, and decided I'm going to clean up. And I checked into a sober house, and I did their program. And then I worked for them towards the end. And then I got hit by a car in December 2016. And I was prescribed painkillers. And I didn't take them at first, but once I had the surgery on my arm and my wrist, I started taking 2 a day. And after a week, I started waking up sick. And that's when I came in here, because I knew I was getting ready to go on a run. So, like, I was ragged out when I got here. It wasn't as bad as it could have gotten, but my mind had already switched. You know, the doctors prescribe stuff, yeah, but that has nothing to do with the addiction that lives inside of me. They can prescribe 20. It only takes 1 for me to get going. Who cares about the notepad? So I came here and, well, I saw people making it. I saw people making themselves make it. I quickly saw there were some frequent flyers. So it was a whole lot going on in one building. And the first thing I really, really thought was, how come nobody else in the city knows about this place? It just seems like everything is right here. And even though I didn't need the majority of what was being offered, I still knew that, like, there was something here. And I kind of just stayed because I started it. And I have a bad habit of being loyal to the end. I always want to see what happens. I always want to see what happens. And I like to sit through things and make it happen. Because I've ran up and down the coast my whole life. So I just stuck it out. But it was difficult because I had a place to live the entire time. So for me to sit through this with some of the things that I dealt with was kind of like a test in myself. I can tell you this. Yeah. You cannot skip the struggle. That's where the personality is built. That's where the character is built. Anybody, anywhere that skips any struggle, when they fall on their face, they're lucky if they get up again. Character, your personality, and who you are is there when nobody else is around. If your way to the top has been paved by people that want to make it easy, when you're the only one there in your car with a whole paycheck and it's 75 degrees and sunny, and you see that young lady walk by and she winks and you wink back, you've got a decision to make. If you don't remember how you felt, how you smelt, what you tasted when you first got here, you're going to repeat that. If you walk in the door to any facility and from the time you get there, you're treated like a celebrity, it's no wonder you're the one that goes back out the door and dies. This is a little more serious to me than it is a lot of people, because I take recovery seriously. I still do things I shouldn't do. I still put myself in dangerous situations. I can justify with the best of them, but I do know this for a fact. You can't skip the struggle. It never works. It never works. Just look at it in basic terms. You take somebody, pull them off the couch, and you give them, hey, you're on the Olympic team. They've done no work. They've done no training. They've done nothing. How's that person going to perform when it's game time? They can't. And that's what that is to me. I mean, I work for like the nation's number one hospital. I'm the overdose outreach advocate. I work in the emergency room as well as out in the community. I'm under bridges. I'm on tops of buildings. I'm in dope spots. I'm out front of dope spots. I'm in soup kitchens. I'm wherever they need me to be to try and help them connect to whatever it is they think they need. So that way, once they get what they think they need and it doesn't work, maybe now they'll be willing to try something else. Unfortunately, the way overdose works is that you overdose once. And from what I've seen since I've started working doing this job is they come in clusters. One overdose, 2-3 days later, another one. But so far, I've had no one die on me. But I'm really, really at it. I mean, I had to tell myself I'm going to do this job whether I get paid for it or not. I just started doing the work because it felt right. And now I'm getting paid for it. And I don't even care about that. All I cared about was money in my past life. I don't even care about that. I care about people seeing who they can be. See what I'm saying? Accept things as they are, but see them for what they can be. And there's no choices when it comes to using. Not with me, there wasn't. It was a 24-hour-a-day thing. I have choices nowadays. I mean, I deal with small situations that used to flip me out, and now I'm just like, I'll get there when I get there. You know, little things like that. It's something in this building, and, you know, I'm not some super advocate, but I could tell you to have this many men in a building that wouldn't even talk to each other outside and no fist fights break out, there's something in the building. It's not the threat of being thrown out, because ultimately 95% of us don't care if we get thrown out of here for real. Not at a certain stage in their, you know, process. Who cares?
What do you think it is?
I don't know, man. Some say God, some say vibe, some say whatever. It's something in this building. Because I know I really wanted to zap out in this building. But then I'm like, you know what? Why? I'm like, why? My spirituality is kind of like this. I tend to believe in whoever and whatever believes in me. But after this year, I've identified what believes in me. The name is God. I'm pretty sure it's a woman. I'm pretty sure, because guys don't really have temperament to deal with things. I know I didn't. No, I don't do the orthodox thing. I don't do the put this on and go here thing. But when I see certain people throughout my day, or when I help somebody do something and all they want to do is light candles and pray for me because God sent me, and I'm looking at them like, my clock almost didn't go off this morning. I almost wasn't here, you know, but to have it be tied to everything that I'm doing, who am I to say that it's not? I mean, I have a God, the same God that helps run my recovery. And I know this much, the way my God works, first thing I put ahead of my recovery is the first thing I lose. You know, right now there's some things that I'm obsessing over. If I truly put them ahead of my well-being in my recovery, I will lose them first and everything will crumble shortly thereafter. It's the truth. Stone cold truth. My motives had to be examined. I had to look at why I was doing things. If I'm trying to get the good job so I can get the money, so I can get the hot chick, my motives are screwed up. So when my outcomes are screwed up, why am I surprised? But I was doing the right thing, but for the wrong reason.
So how do you define who you are today?
I feel like that I am here right now to help, period. That's not blind help, but I feel like my existence right now on this earth is, if I'm not making it better, don't touch it.
Oh, man. As you look back on this year, the year that you spent here, what are you most thankful for? And then what are you still kind of working on today?
I'm thankful that I got to meet every single person that I did, every single person. Because now that I'm out here and I'm around town and I'm doing all these little things, I get to see them and help them. They get to see me and see that somebody has made it. And it just gives everybody a little bit of hope across the board. I mean, I want to try to like share the hope that I learned, because there was a lot of BS here, but there was also a lot of hope, because I saw people come through the door totally messed up. And even before they got better, they felt better. It's real. So if they can do that, I can do this, and I can even be myself the whole time. So.